What happens in Vegas gets you a jackpot of awards. Because we're talking movies, we're talking Leaving Las Vegas, starring Nicolas Cage. And our favorite, it's all about the shoe, Elizabeth Shoe. Based on the book, Leaving Las Vegas, written by John O'Brien, and written and directed by Mike Figgis. That's a nice talk, Chris. Keep drinking. Between the 101 proof breath and the occasional bits of drool, some interesting words come out.
I feel that's like so me. Listen, we both know that I'm a drunk, and I know you're a hooker. I hope you understand I'm a person who is totally at ease with that, which is not to say that I'm indifferent or I don't care. It simply means that I trust and accept your judgment. Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of How'd You Like That Movie? I hope you're ready to need a shower after we're talking about the 1995 neon noir, gritty under your fingernails, under your skin film, Leaving Las Vegas. Scott, let's go. Let's get into this. Let's get down on the strip.
I didn't think it was like that. Fucking gritty.
Really? Are you sure you watched the right movie? Let me get into this. In Vegas or something?
I was gonna watch. I'm like, that's also with Nick Cage in Vegas. I'm like, I can watch that one.
Too. You watched National Lampoon's Vegas Vacation. You're like, it was hilarious. Chevy Chase was amazing in this.
Fucking Randy Quaid. But okay, so doing this podcast allows me. Or both of us to kind of go back and look at these films, which really I wouldn't really do on a normal basis. And it kind of sets a new perspective on this, especially since, like I said in the intro, this movie is based on a book by John O'Brien, who literally committed suicide weeks after signing away the film rights to make this film. You know, he was in the industry, you can say.
He was extremely bad alcoholic.
Yes. But what I'm saying is, like, if you look at the first scene of this movie with the late, great Richard Lewis and Steven Weber, that's literally the origin story of Me Too about to happen 20 years later. Right? Like... tell me if I'm telling lies. I'm watching this and I'm like, holy shit. Like, cause they're playing two studio execs, one for TriStar and one for fucking MGM was releasing this film. So that's what makes it kind of like funny that.
And they've got these two starlets at their table. Who's like,
yeah, that are trying to be up and comers and like, yeah, we really like this movie. Cause you know, it's going to allow us to shoot guns and have a couple more scenes. And they're just like, not yeah.
They're like, can we get another round of drinks here? Let's get some more drinks in this place.
Yeah, and then Nick Cage comes in and just kind of ruins the mood there.
The whole vibe. But, he definitely fucks the whole vibe of that dinner up right away.
So that was the thing. Like, looking back, I'm like, you know, with him being a writer and stuff like that, you know, is a kind of like, this is what it was like. But like when I watched this movie originally in the 90s, I didn't think anything fucking of it until now. Like when we're in the 2020s, like kind of lenses, I'm like, oh, they're not getting any more parts after this dinner. Like, that's it.
So you did not find this movie gritty? What the fuck movie did you watch?
I'm not saying, I guess for me, I have a different definition of gritty.
Let's hear the Scott definition of gritty if this movie doesn't meet that threshold.
No, this is more like a drama to me than like gritty. Like,
yeah, like a drama dragged out of like a sewer. Like, it is so base and just like real, like cut, like glass cuttable realism. Just like, yeah, like I feel I have trouble watching this film to the point that I know, because I've seen the film before. I know about the rape scene that comes up near the end, which in the book supposedly was actually much sooner. And they kind of moved it around just because they felt like maybe the film would not get made if it basically opened with a fucking gang rape. I was watching it at night and I'm like, I knew that part was coming up. And I literally stopped the movie, waited for the next day and finished the last, like, whatever it is, like 18 minutes or whatever. I was just like, it's so fucking graphic, man. Like,
okay. Where did you watch this movie?
I watched it on Amazon this time.
Prime?
And there's a lot taken out of it. Like, there's...
Because that's what I'm thinking, too. Because I knew, like, I remembered the rape scene. And I did think, like, it went, like, a lot longer and a lot more graphic. But, like, right before it, when it had, like, it seemed like it was, like, 30 to 45 minutes of just, like, black screen.
Yes.
And I'm like... Did they cut the shit out?
I'm pretty sure they did. I know that there is even a more, how can I put this? Like a more unrated cut that exists, I believe, in the DVD version. It was originally, I guess, on the Laserdisc, and then that got trimmed for the VHS. But again, that sexual assault that happens in the hotel room, I remember it being like way more of that happening. There was this black screen that basically came up, which is not like a standard transition. It felt like they just went chop and then basically the scene is over. But even what they do show, like when she's in that hotel room and you're like, it's starting to like the tension's like ratcheting up. And then she gets that first like punch in the face and you're just like, holy fuck, here we go, man. Like,
Like that. Like, I don't want to say it was a well scene, but like it was traumatizing. And like what the director and writer set out to do, like it was done there, right? Like you feel for her, like she, and this is like 100% the reverse fucking Pretty Woman, right? Like,
so it's funny that, hold on, it's I'm glad you brought up Pretty Woman, because we talked about Pretty Woman, I think we did a whole show on it. Didn't it, the original title was 1500 or something like that, right?
Or like 3000?
3000,
like,
yeah.
It was the amount of money she
that's
was
right, that's right, that's right, sorry. And the original screenplay was super dark. And as I'm watching this, I'm like, if I was going to do that original dark screenplay, this is how it would have looked. Except it would have been Hollywood Boulevard, Los Angeles, not in Vegas. But it had that kind of, like I said, like seriously, like this film makes me feel... like creepy crawly underneath my skin. I was thinking about like a double feature I would probably put this with. It's Uncut Gems, the Safi Brothers Uncut Gems. And if you really wanted to get like really go like hardcore, also have like Requiem for a Dream and go like for a triple feature. You know what I mean?
See, this is getting off topic, but if I was going to put this with a double feature, I would have done True Romance.
Why? Tie it in.
Because
you got to tie it in. What? Like, at least Uncut Gems is about a gambling addiction and Rec Room for a Dream is about drug addiction. So tell me why True Romance.
What? I thought you were doing Leaving Las Vegas with it, right? So I would go like, you know, you have two stories of like, you know, the fantasy hooker with, you know, the John that's going to save them. But one, they both die at the end, but one is super violent. And the other
they both die at the end. What the fuck are you talking about?
Christian Slater doesn't die at the end of
No. Romance? Jesus, do you remember? Literally the last scene is them dancing on a fucking beach in Mexico with their kid. And he's missing an eye. Spoiler alert, Scott.
Wait, didn't he?
Sure. I could see that tied in, like the hooker with the heart of gold. I mean, Nicolas Cage was married to Patricia Arquette. So, I mean, that works as well.
There you go. There you go.
So this film, I think it's just, it's I don't know what, the word beautiful is not the right word. It is so effective. I think it's a great piece of cinema. I think that if you are, like, you love the craftsmanship or the craft of movie making, you have to watch it. Because it does such a good job of taking this just awful fucking subject matter. Like, and let's not forget, both Nicolas Cage and Elizabeth Shue, they 100% deserve their Oscar nods, and Nicolas Cage obviously won the Oscar for this. They're just like, they are fucking at the top of their game in this film. The acting is just phenomenal. And I don't, both roles, like, but let's, you know, Nicolas Cage, for example, I can't think of another actor that would be better suited for this role.
Well, it's funny you said that, because I was going to bring something up, but I can just bring it up now. So in a recent interview, Mike Figgis, the director, stated that neither he nor Cage received their $100,000 fees for directing or acting in this movie.
Huh? How does that happen?
Because apparently the studios claimed that this movie never made a profit. And according to Box Office Mojo, the film made $32 million domestically, and apparently the budget was $4 million. And you could probably take that out now, because I'm assuming the budget of $4 million included the $100,000 for $200,000 for each of them. So it only could really cost the studio $3.8 million.
So I've got some more numbers. I've got a $4 million production budget with $2 million spent on marketing. And I've got it coming in at about $50 million box office, let alone whatever it did on DVD, Blu-ray, VHS. This is what they call Hollywood accounting. This is why people like Christopher Nolan want first dollar returns, because the studio somehow can make 40 million bucks, give or take, and go, there's no money. There's no money.
Yeah, well, Cage confirmed it as well, right? And he goes, most likely he didn't get paid. But for him, he's like, I don't really care about it now, like the money, because he goes, like, I was meant to play the, yeah, he goes, but it was more that, you know, he read the script and he was like, I need to play this person. Like, I need to play this part. And for the experience and everything like that, he was so happy for. And which probably now he's probably going to his accountant, like, I had to sell my fucking Action Comics number one to make money.
I had to sell my dinosaur skull.
And you're telling me these fuckers didn't, it didn't pay me? He's like, I want interest now.
And I mean, let's be honest, like, Nicolas Cage, this is the film that really jumped him into the, you know, that period where he was definitely A-list. Like, he was like the man. Because after this, he did The Rock, Con Air, 8mm, Bring Out Your Dead. And before that, he'd done like kooky stuff like Raising Arizona and Vampire's Kiss. Like, I mean, he's got a large, very large filmography, obviously. But this is that demarcation line where all of a sudden people were like, yo, who the fuck, like, let's get Nick Cage in our movies. And you need a certain amount of manic energy to play this character. He's so unhinged but also subtle at other points. And again, like, I cannot even think of another actor that I think, I mean, maybe Shia LaBeouf, possibly, like, in a remake, could maybe pull that off. But you kind of need, like, a fucked up dude to play this role.
Yeah, but I think, you know, there's always that thing, you know, like, you never go full Joker or you never go full Cage.
Yeah.
Like, to me, going full Cage is that fucking Cherry Hest, man. Like, that chest hair. Like, you don't see that. You know, if it was Brad Pitt, that thing would have been fucking
manicured, like, up and stuff.
Like, oh yeah, but just watching the fucking hair, like, him.
Oh, and there's a camera. The camera pans down. I mean, I guess it tilts down and pans across his chest as if it's fucking landscape or something. Like, it's one of the few cinematic shots is Nick Cage's chest hair.
Oh yeah, but I think, like, everything, like, in terms of, I'm assuming you have it, who the cinematographer is.
Yeah, Declan Quinn, who's Aidan Quinn's brother.
Yeah,
like, which is funny because he got his start in Desperately Seeking Susan, which his brother was in. So,
okay,
yeah, that's a little factoid. Thanks for tuning into our podcast.
I'm surprised you're not going fucking nepo. Like, you're only fucking in it because of your brother. But no, what I was gonna say is the one scene that I enjoyed a lot. Was when they were at that desert hotel. And you know, they're like making out or whatever, and she's just pouring the alcohol.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, my. Yes. Keep going.
But like, to me, it's not that, you know, it's sexy or anything like that, but it was just like,
well, it is that. It's super erotic.
It is, but it's also like the fucking like symbolism of that. Like, the only thing that's going to get this guy going is literally the taste of alcohol, yeah, right? Like, she literally had to drown herself into alcohol for him to like show that kind of emotion. And then, you know,
well, it shows like her perfect understanding of him. And I mean, so one of the things I like that they do in this film to do a little bit of like exposition is she must be at like a therapist's office or something like that.
I was trying to figure that out too, because I was like, oh, it must reveal who it is at the end, but I'm like, it doesn't.
Well, you never like, hear the therapist talk. You just hear her, right? Well,
who knows it's a therapist? For all you know, she's fucking selling that script, right?
Sure, sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a good point. And she talks about in one of the, I might even be the opening scene that is done, like that exposition scene, where she talks about how I know very quickly how to be what, like whatever the man wants or whatever the client wants.
Oh, yeah. That's when she's talking to also the late, great Julian Sands, who, her pimp, because he seemed like to give her a free one to those businessmen to try to get more kind of thing. Because that's her introduction scene, right? When she walks in and he's like, you know, I'm new to here and I want to make friends. He's like, here's my present for you. And then she looks around the scene and then goes to the woman. And then she goes, you guys want to watch.
And you know who she says that to? French fucking Stewart from fucking Third Rock from the Sun. I was like, yo, I know that motherfucker.
Well, in terms of like actors that you would know, it's kind of serendipitous, you would say, that, you know, Mariska Hargitay is the hooker at the bar. And now she's all about the Law and Order SVU.
Mm-hmm.
She's fighting those crimes.
And I mean, there's a couple interesting cameos in here. I mean, Arlie Emery from like, obviously from Full Metal Jacket and Toy Story. And like, he always plays the Marine guy. Seeing him as the like dude at the bar, like the convention goer, I was like, holy shit, man. Like, they're like, even in the like minutia, like obviously we talked about Richard Lewis, Valerie Golino, who was in like Big Top Pee Wee. And what else was she in? I recognize her. She's the
Hot
girl.
Shots part.
Yes, Hot Shots part. Do it. Yes.
No, both Hot Shots. She was in both.
Yeah. Sorry. I saw her and I was like, holy shit. Like, they've just got this like great little cast of people kind of under the surface. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like Danny Houston, who's fucking amazing. He was like my best character in American Horror Story season 3, Coven. He's like the ghost. He's like the ghost serial killer. But
that was like one of the worst. Out of all the seasons I did watch, Coven was like one of the worst. Although it had Stevie Nicks in it, so that's good, I guess. You know,
fuck you. But yeah, he's like awesome now. Yeah, it just seems like at this point, and who knows, right? But it just seems like at this point, it was a lot of actors who were coming up, right? Like Shawnee Smith, who's in Saw. I was watching this, similar to you, I had to break apart. Like, I couldn't do this movie straight for some reason. So I broke it apart.
Where did you break it up?
And honestly, it's almost exactly where you were. It was just before I realized it was going to be the rave scene, right? Like, and then, so then I started next morning, I started watching it.
Nothing like waking up to a rape scene, eh? You're like, a little coffee, you know, a little sexual assault.
You know, what do I got to do today? But, so my wife came in after all that was done. And then she sat down and she was like, it's when, oh my God, Laurie Metcalf, the landlady and her husband are standing by the gate.
That's right. That's right. Was she in Roseanne? She was in Uncle Buck,
Yes. And she was in Roseanne and Scream 2. But the thing that always thought was funny with that scene is like they're yelling at Elizabeth Shue because she shows up and Nicolas Cage is sleeping on the steps, which makes it seem like they couldn't get out, right? Because is that what they were saying? We've been standing here forever. No.
I think she was just like, I'm not letting this fucking dude in. Like, I'm not, like, until you get here and can explain the situation.
Because I'm like, the gate opened inwards. I'm like, they could have fucking went out and just like stepped over him. Like, that part I didn't get. But yeah, my wife's just like going and she was like, is that Marcy from Married with Children? I'm like, no. I'm like, she's from Roseanne. And he was like, okay. And then when Elizabeth Shue showed up, she goes, is that Julia Roberts? And
Jesus.
I'm like, nope. I'm like, and then, oh, fuck, Nick. What was her name for Nick Cage? She was like, is that Dick Johnson? I'm like, yep, that's Dick Johnson. And then she was like, yeah, yeah, Face Off. I'm like, yep, he was in Face
Off. That's Dick Johnson. The old Dick Johnson.
Then I was like, what the fuck, man?
Anyway, I don't want to just talk about Nicolas Cage. I think the casting of Elizabeth Shue, I mean, to me and like our generation, she was like the Karate Kid, Adventures in Babysitting. Obviously, she was in Cocktail, but like she was probably like could have been like one of your first like screen crushes as a kid. And then she's delivering a line like, for $500, you can basically do whatever you want. You can even fuck my ass. You can come in my face. Just don't get it in my hair. Like, you're like, oh shit. I mean, that wasn't like any adventure in this Babysitter. I mean, maybe that's a different movie.
I'm pretty sure there is an Adventures in Babysitting.
It literally exactly Adventures is. In the Babysitter.
Yeah. I'm 100% sure I've watched it. But the thing that's interesting, like in terms, like how you were saying, like in terms of trajectory, right? Mm. So Cage goes and it's just blockbuster after blockbuster, right? But Shue, after this, it seems like they, like, it wasn't, like, I'm not going to say much.
It didn't, yeah.
Yeah, because it goes The Saint, which bombed.
Well, and also, like, it's, I mean, that's not, like, a big high piece of drama. It was, like, kind of like an action dramedy drama.
Yeah, but so was Cage. You can't say Rock and fucking Con Air and fucking Face Off or, like,
8mm. 8mm is a fucking sick film, man. And yeah, same with Bring Out Your Dead. Like, that's Scorsese.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. She was in, you know, Hollow Man with Kevin Bacon. Amy and Isabel.
I really like her in Hamlet 2 as herself. I love that movie. That movie's fucking crazy. If you haven't seen Hamlet 2 and you're having a fucking shitty day, just go watch that movie. That movie will make you fucking smile. Sorry, keep going, Scott.
Yeah, but that's the thing that I'm kind of surprised, like, about. It just seemed like, you know, for her, which is disappointing because I do think she is an amazing actress, like,
and would have been coming off of an Oscar nod and like Oscars, BAFTAs, Independent Spirit Awards, like hitting all these fucking things. You figure like you would see her move into a lead, like a really good dramatic lead or something, and it just doesn't seem to happen. Although when you look at her filmography, like, she's been working consistently this whole time.
Yes.
She's also, obviously, she's in Cobra Kai a bit because it's about Karate Kid. And then she was great in The Boys until she got her, head burned out? fucking eye
sockets. And then, you know, CSI. She was on CSI for a while. But it's the same with the director and writer. Like, you think having, you know, being nominated for a screenplay, nominated for director, like, you would get a kind of more like high, like not high profile, but more kind of thing. But it seems like it's the same scenario where, you know, after this, it seemed like he had one or two bombs and that's just it. Like, you don't, like, it seems like now he's more TV, like he's, which TV is now like fucking God.
Kind of where it's at, yeah.
Yeah, you know, his biggest fucking credit after this movie. Cold Creek Manor filmed where, Chris?
I have no idea.
It was fucking filmed here in Cambridge.
Was it really?
Yes.
Are you fucking serious?
It was filmed by Langdon Hall.
Oh, wow. Good for Cambridge. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
look at that. I still little remember bit of CanCon. We haven't done CanCon in a while, and now we got CameCon. CameCon.
Yeah, I still remember to this day, man, fucking when this movie was being filmed, fucking seeing Sharon Stone at the Cambridge Mall and just being like, she must be so fucking disappointed in our mall. coming from everywhere else, she was like, this mall is probably a piece of shit.
I mean, at that time, she probably looked at the entire city. Actually, to this day, she'd probably look at her entire city and be like, this place is kind of depressing.
No, she would, most likely they would have been staying at Langton Hall, so they would have been. And that's where all the celebs go during TIFF and stuff, where most of them stay.
One of the things I really like about the cinematography around this film is it's shot on 16 millimeter versus 35. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to tell that from watching, but what it allowed them to do, they shot a lot of this guerrilla in LA, or sorry, in Las Vegas without permits. So having the smaller camera setup and stuff, they were just kind of running and gunning. So you get it, fucking, this film feels so real. Like the acting performances, even the B-roll, like helicopter Vegas scenes, like it feels like you're almost there. Like it doesn't feel super cinematic or staged. And some of that is going to be due to the fact that you have this really, well, not really light, but much lighter camera setup than using a big 35 millimeter, right?
No, I'll say there's two, like the things that in terms of background and stuff that I do feel are staged, like you can, like in my opinion,
well,
you
anything
can
in
tell,
the Vegas casino.
Yeah, the casino shit was that. But like just off topic kind of thing, I just need some, like something I needed to wrap in terms of the plot. So his whole thing is he wants to kill himself, but he wants to die by alcohol poisoning. He just wants to like drink himself to death.
Yep.
So then he moves to Vegas, like he sells his shit, moves to Vegas, right?
Yep.
Why did he have to sell his shit? If he just went to the casino, they drink for free.
Bah, bah, bah. Well, I mean, did you see them throw his fucking ass out of the casino?
Casinos
don't let you fucking drink that hard.
Oh, fuck you, they don't. Fuck you, they don't. They get you so fucking hammered that you're signing, like, your little ledger.
Yeah, they don't let you get belligerent.
Yeah, they actually do.
And that scene is wild. Because it's like...
And that was just because they didn't have a Bloody Mary, right? Like, they weren't cutting him off. They just didn't have a Bloody Mary.
Yeah, and then he freaks out and, like, flips the fucking table. Basically gets, like, carried out by six fucking dudes. Or they were going to carry him out. Just frothing at the mouth, like, wild. Like, that... Yeah, that scene is crazy. Was there anything about this film specifically that stood out to you? Like... I still can't believe you didn't think it was gritty. You still have not resolved that. If this film is not gritty, what the fuck is, Scott? What is gritty? You're just like, oh, it's just a drama. It's just a normal drama.
No.
Schindler's List is a comedy. Like, what the fuck?
So gritty. It didn't... Because that's the thing. It didn't... Like, to me, this wasn't a film that like stayed with me after.
That doesn't necessarily mean that it's not great.
But that's the thing, like, because you're saying it's getting in your fingernails, it's like getting it, like, to me it didn't. Like Schindler's List, yeah. Fucking Deliverance, yeah. Fucking Deer Hunter, yeah. Taxi Driver, yeah. Like fucking Platoon, like shit, like
I think you're mistaking gritty with memorable.
No, like to me, it's like if I'm thinking about it after, yeah. Like to me, I'm like, holy shit! Like, you know, like with this one, I 100% agree with you. Realistic. It seems like very realistic, and you know, it could be like reality, fucking. Like caught on camera if needed be, right?
Well, Nicolas Cage, Nicolas Cage and Elizabeth Shue both did tons of research for this. Nicolas Cage did a bunch of binge drinking in Ireland, recorded himself. He also visited a bunch of like chronic alcoholics in the hospital. And Elizabeth Shue was like, went and hung out with like Vegas prostitutes to get the kind of the beats right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So that's why they're all like, are you here for the convention? Because there's nothing more going on in Vegas than a fucking convention. So I can only imagine what CinemaCon in Vegas is like. But
all those fucking nerds.
Whatever. But I think the fact that this is a semi-auto
autobiographical.
Yes. Book. And like that the writer of this book, you know, passed, like they could take, like there wasn't anybody really there to be like, no, this didn't happen. Like they could take
it. So I read an article with his sister and it's like, it's semi-autobiographical. A lot of that stuff did not happen. It is a book. The alcoholism is the most biographical part. The feeling of the character is the most biographical. There was no Elizabeth Shue hooker. There was no Vegas. There was none of that in the actual guy's life. He ended up, killed himself in fucking his apartment in Beverly Hills.
Okay. Like, you just this guy meant nothing. You're just like, fuck it, nothing. But all his other books have something to do with like Stripper Lesson or something like that, I think it was called.
Mm.
Right? So it seemed like he hung around with a bunch of, ladies of the night. But yeah, like to me, either than this, so what else would you consider a gritty movie?
Uncut Gems. So, that's why I put them both together. The type of film that makes you like, literally feel like you're going through what the characters are going through, and it's like basically makes you feel dirty or grimy or whatever, you know what I mean?
Uncut Gems to me is more like tension, like you're just like, oh, you're like,
tension is very specific tension, it's the gambling tension, like you're like, oh my god, you're finally, you can get out of this, get out of it, no, you're gonna go lay it all on fucking on the line again. Like it makes you feel anxious. The character, the emotion that the characters are experiencing, it makes you feel the same things, right?
Mm-hmm. Anything else? So you named one.
Well, I mean, again, I've already referenced Requiem for a Dream. I mean, Trainspotting has scenes that are super, super graphic when it comes to detoxing from heroin. Basketball Diaries is in that list as well. Anything like dark like that, like that's dealing with subject matter in a very kind of almost blatant in your face kind of way.
So I'm looking right now, and in terms of just the definition of grittiness and gritty movies.
Mm.
So here are some movies that people believe are gritty movies, and unfortunately, Chris, this movie's not one of them.
Someone on the internet doesn't agree with me. Big fucking
no. Well, that's like, well, they do agree with you with Requiem for a Dream, right? They do. But also there's Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, Last House on the Left, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Mean Streets, Taxi Driver.
Mm.
But yeah, this movie is not one of them.
Well, according to the whatever fucking website you're looking at,
it says the fucking guy who's like, here, and what in like, I'm gonna count to five, and you're gonna just name some random movie critic from fuck website nowhere. Like, this is why it's gritty. Like, I already know what you're about to do. So do you want to do it now?
I'm going to do it at the end of the show. But it's this film's listen. It's got a 91% from the critics, got an 85% from the audience. Like the movie Closer, this is the type of film for me that I'm glad I've watched it as far as a film experience. Again, I think the craftsmanship is so fantastic. But it's not something I need to watch all the time because it's, it gets under your skin. And same way, like I've talked about the movie Closer with like Julia Roberts and Clive Owen, and Natalie Portman and Jude Law. And I think I saw that film once. I was like, wow, that was well done. Never need to watch that shit again because that was fucking traumatizing. I think I highly recommend that if you are someone who enjoys cinema, watch this film. But yeah, buckle up. Like it's a fucking raw ride the whole way. Like the whole way. Even the good parts are fucking raw. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so who... I know, so Cage won, Shue didn't.
And it was also nominated for Best Director and Adapted Screenplay.
Right. So it wasn't nominated for Picture?
No, which is weird. I thought the same thing. Those are usually, you have those, usually you get nominated for Best Picture. So I don't know how it did not get nominated for Best Picture.
No, so directing, he lost to Gibson for Braveheart.
Mm.
Susan Sarandon won instead of Shu. I'm so, Sharon Stone too in Casino.
Yeah,
so that was a good one.
Anyway,
but who did?
Do you got anything else before we get out of here or what?
Before you do the random internet guy from website,
movies. Actually, and I'm going to actually do two quotes. I'm going to finish on two quotes. So say your last piece, Scott.
Yeah, I was going to say random quotidic guy from the website movies that agree with Chris. Go ahead.
All right. Here's my one of two. So I've got David Anson from Newsweek. A love story like no other. Mike Fison's Leaving Las Vegas is bleak, mesmerizing raspity of self-destruction. Defiantly uninterested in peddling Hollywood-style uplift. 100%. There is no uplift. There is no, like, happy fucking ending. Actually, on the topic of the ending, when he gives his last gasp and lets go of her hand, when it first went to black, I'm like, oh my god, that's a perfect fucking ending. And then they, like, transition to her sitting on the bed and doing a little bit of exposition. I was like, fuck! Just take that last bit out. That was, like, such a perfect ending. Anyway, and finishing up, Owen Gleiberman from Entertainment Weekly. Dark and giddy at the same time, Leaving Las Vegas takes us into a dreamy, intoxicated places no movie about alcohol has gone before.
And that is our wrap for the day. Please like and subscribe to this podcast. Tell your friends. If you want to get a hold of us, reach us at the www.howdyoulikethatmovie.com.
One last thing before we go, though. Why, what's with your background? For those that aren't listening, he just has the How'd You Like That Movie Season 4 background. Like, Scott couldn't even pull up a Leaving Las Vegas background, or what?
Well, first, like, I kind of want to, like, this makes it, like, a lot easier if I just keep it like this. Like, you keep yours. Mm. Like, so every week I don't have to fucking find something.
Oh, and then it's half very the difficult. It's very difficult. But it was like your shtick, man. It was your shtick.
I know, but... But then half the time, too, I noticed once watching the YouTube, like, some of the backgrounds are, like, blurry and shit when it gets transitioned. So I'm like, this seems nice, crisp and clear. But also, like, what picture did you want me to put? Like, her, like, in the fetal position in the shower? Like, what picture would you think I should put for this movie? Right?
Actually, listen, any shot from that scene in the, like, desert, where she's dumping the liquor, the booze all over her body.
And then it doesn't get aired on YouTube, right? Because of the movies.
Production by Rod Shaver, Vader Monkey Productions.